Welcome, everybody, to the Depths of Motherhood podcast. This is a special season dedicated to the tribe of the mother. But also, I know any mothers listening will find this extremely valuable. I've created each episode to offer simple, digestible, and supportive information, which I hope will educate and inspire anyone who listens. So this is by popular demand. Please help us to educate and support the tribe holding the mother. Look forward to passionate and highly knowledgeable guests dedicated to reclaiming the essence of birth and embracing conscious parenting. Throughout our time together, our guests will serve as the guiding voices, illuminating the path towards a deeper understanding of preconception, pregnancy, birth, and postpartum. This is with the mother and the baby being the center of the exploration. In the show notes, you'll discover the link to Nourished Mother Package, which will offer many different resources to complement each episode. This is free for all members in the women's circle, or £33 for everybody who just wants to purchase the package. A heartfelt thank you to our incredible guests, and immense gratitude to my partner for supporting me on this creation. And finally, last but not least, special thank you to Araya, my daughter, for being the endless well of inspiration. Welcome, everybody, to another episode. We are still exploring preconception at the moment, and this week we are delving into the world of hormonal health with Bindi Staples. She is a board-certified integrative health practitioner specializing in women's health. She's the host of the Vibrant You podcast, dedicated to guiding women towards their happiest, healthiest, and most vibrant selves. Today we're going to be talking about the hormone pyramid. Have you ever heard of it? Have you ever seen it? I loved seeing the image on Bindi's social media recently because it really helped with my mind to look at these layers of what are contributing to our sex hormone health. And this really holds the key to understanding hormonal imbalances and how they can affect our whole being and how these imbalances can manifest in our physical, mental, emotional reality. So as we come to understand these different tiers in this pyramid, Bindi also helps us to see how they can manifest and how we can support ourselves when we notice an imbalance and offer practical steps to bring our body back into harmony. And she explains how we can look at our menstrual blood to see where there might be an imbalance in our estrogen and progesterone just by looking at the color. And I'm curious if you have worked with your blood yet. For the past year, I have been painting with my blood every month, and it's so incredible to see how the blood changes. I'll talk about this in the next episode I release, which is with Alexandra and Shani, who wrote the book Wild Power. So I hope you can tune into that one. By the end of this conversation, we get deeper into sleep deprivation, because this is one of the major stresses in modern life, especially if you're already a mother. So if you're listening to this and you are preparing your body to conceive and you don't have any children yet, and you hear people say to you, make the most of it now, because when the baby comes, you won't be getting any sleep. Well, that really annoyed me at first. There is something in that, though, because as the baby nestles up to the mother throughout the days, the baby will wake up on regular intervals to feel their mother's heartbeat, to listen to her breath, to smell her, to drink her milk. And this is to help regulate the baby's nervous system, to let them know that they're safe, to let them know that they have everything that they need. So that means we are stepping into this experience where our sleep is going to be disturbed because of this. And it's so, so beautiful. And I really do feel that on the other side now as a mother, if I hadn't got so triggered, I might have spent more time replenishing the sleep that I had lost through my younger years and making sure that I was fully nourished and rested. Because up until the pregnancy, I was go, go, go. I was working at a high stress level. I had the retreat center, so I was busy all of the time. Through running this retreat business, I was on the go 24/7, and I didn't even have my own room to sleep in. Some days, the retreat center would just be packed up, and I would be sleeping for months at a time in a bell tent in my back garden, which I actually liked because I had some space. But I also had disturbed sleep then because I heard the animals, I heard things outside, and I noticed I did wake up a lot. So maybe that was my training. But there was one thing that wasn't healthy and nourishing, was that I just wasn't getting enough quality sleep. I wasn't nourishing myself. I wasn't able to switch off ever because I was being the provider for myself. I had this business. If I knew then what I knew now from experience, I would have made time for myself to rest, to be nourished, to replenish. And I think through being with our menstrual cycle, we can practice that. That is the gift. It is the training to getting to know ourselves as we go through these different rites of passage. And actually, when I became pregnant, I had to leave the retreat center. We left because it was just not what our family energy was calling for. And this was the first time, I would say, in my entire life that I had been able to rest. Someone else was providing for me. I didn't have anything to do. I didn't have any work to do. And I didn't know what to do with myself. So in this conversation, we talk about that. How do we learn the skill to actually rest and really rest, not just laying there and thinking about what we need to do, or even going into meditation with an intention to manifest? This is a really big one that's spreading around this spiritual community, is you want to manifest your future. Do all this stuff. When you're in meditation, think about your future, visualize it. Okay, so when are we actually just being, switching the mind off and allowing ourselves to soften and release any unnecessary tension and to welcome our soul home, to just be deeply nourished? And Bindi gives some amazing tips to get you started. So I hope that you can stay tuned right to the very end to get all this juicy information. And also the resources to accompany this episode is a yoga nidra guided by myself. So if you are part of the Women's Circle membership, which is £18 a month, you will have access to this resource through the Nourished Mother package. If you're not in the membership, but you still want access to all of these resources that I'm putting in there, which is going from preconception to postpartum, you can buy it as a one-off for $33. So right now we have got menstrual cycle awareness workshop, fertility awareness workshop, the yoga nidra, and a little ebook with the herbal blends that I like to use throughout each phase of my cycle. So I'm curious to where you're at in your menstrual cycle right now. If you know, if you're tracking it, if your menstrual cycle is absent, if you are waiting for it to come back after the birth of a child, whatever it is, just bringing that into the energy of this episode today. Before we dive in, let's take a moment to check in with our breath. Take in a deep inhale and making the exhale even longer. And just by doing this allows us to soothe the nervous system, with the exhale being the center of attention, with it being longer. I hope you loved this episode as much as I loved recording it. Thank you.
Like, what got you into doing the work that you're doing, and also about your podcast as well?
Yeah, thanks so much for asking. So I'm an integrative health practitioner and I'm the host of the Vibrant You podcast, which, just like you, I'm so passionate about supporting women and optimizing their health and hormones and their journey into motherhood as well. And my story really began many, many years ago, actually when I was still a kid. I was 12 years old when I basically one day woke up on the floor in my closet. I had just collapsed. I went unconscious and I woke up thinking, what is going on? What the heck am I doing here? And a year after that initial event of basically collapsing in the floor of my closet as a kid, I went on this medical journey for a year of going to all the doctors, all the specialists, trying to figure out what was quote unquote wrong with me. I was hallucinating. I was seeing things that weren't there. I was having all kinds of neurological and psychological happenings that nobody could figure out. And for almost a year, I kept hearing the same story. We can't find anything wrong with you. Your bloods are coming back normal. We didn't find anything on the ECG exam that we did, or the spinal tap, or all these things. And meanwhile, that entire year, I'm having these episodes of epileptic seizures every single day, or almost every single day for a year, and practically lived in hospital. And naturally just missed out on school and life and, you know, field trips and friendships for that entire year. And it was a really difficult, scary time. And I was so blessed that one day I went up into my living room with my mom. It was a Wednesday morning, which normally I'd be in school, but of course I didn't, because I had just had a seizure the night before and just woke up from a 21-hour sleep. That's all I did was sleep. And I was so drugged up and so medicated from what the doctors had shared with me, this antidepressant, it's all in your head, this medication, this anti-epileptic drug that just numbed me out and I became a zombie. And so on this particular Wednesday morning, I remember looking at my mom and saying, with just this moment of sobriety and this moment of clarity in between seizures and drugs, and saying to her, Mom, I don't want to do this anymore. You know, I'd rather have a seizure. I'd rather have an episode and have like a level of clarity and capacity to connect and capacity to think and creativity, which the drugs just so suppressed in my child body, you know? And in this moment of clarity, she too was like, yeah, I don't want this for you either. And from that moment on, everything changed because I stopped taking the drugs and I said, there has to be another way. And from that moment, I ended up finding all these little signs from God and the universe that led my path to vibrant health and healing. And it started with finding literally a sign about yoga. And I come from a town of 6,000 people in rural Alberta in Canada, which is very small and very not the culture of wellness, like Costa Rica that you're in, Danielle, and me living here in Bali. It's like, what is yoga? What is all these modalities? So I actually ended up moving cities as a kid. I moved out at a really young age to pursue this path of yoga and meditation and wellness, and found a functional medicine doctor that did extensive lab testing. And all of a sudden, the answer is not, no, there's not anything wrong with you. You're riddled with heavy metals and you've got all these gut pathogens and your hormones are a wreck and all of these things that we finally had answers for. And it was the first time that someone looked me in the eyes, an adult, a practitioner actually, looked me in the eyes, and it wasn't pity reflected back at me or fear or uncertainty. I don't know what's wrong with you and you're just crazy. It's all in your head. It was the first time someone looked in my eyes and said, yeah, it all makes sense and I've got you. And from that moment on, you know, within 1 month, I was completely seizure free, off all the medication, started living a vibrant, happy, youthful child. And naturally, as you can imagine, just committed my entire life to studying, you know, the ancient wisdom of ancient healing traditions of Ayurveda, and traveled around Asia for 10 years in study and in mentorships, as well as Western functional medicine and functional lab testing, and bridging those worlds to really help women, especially in those spots, to really access the deepest level of health and vitality that they can.
Wow. Oh my gosh. I had all the emotions come up listening to you then. I think because I have a daughter, I just imagined her saying that to me, that moment you said to your mom, like, I can't do this. I don't want to do this anymore. And then the relief for someone to look at you and say, you're not going crazy. You're going to be okay. And I've got you. Like, oh, super powerful. Them moments. Oh my gosh. And it's like these journeys that bring us to these moments of sharing the stuff that you're doing. And you are that person for people now when they see you and they're like, I see you. I've got you. Don't worry. There's another way. Thank you for sharing that. Mm. I think the moments in the beginning, I'm always like, oh my gosh. Okay, now it's a show. So I found one of your posts, which was talking about the hormone period. The hormone pyramid. This is my nighttime conversation. So tell me a little bit about that. So this is the first time that I'd heard it put that way.
Yeah, thanks for that. So this hormone pyramid is basically a model of helping us understand how our different hormones interact with one another. So oftentimes, women will come to me with hormone imbalances. And of course, we have many hormones, but what most people call a hormone imbalance is they're referring to their female sex hormones, right? And they say, I think I have some sort of hormone imbalance. You know, my periods are off, or I'm struggling to conceive, or I've got skin issues, or I'm just really PMS-y before my period, or I've got lots of period cramps or breast tenderness. So we can suspect that there's a level of female sex hormone imbalance. Now, what I call this hormone pyramid, if you just imagine like a pyramid shape, and that there's different levels or different layers or tiers on that pyramid, that helps us to achieve optimal hormone harmony. And where most of our minds go is straight to our sex hormones, right? I know my mind does. Goes to our estrogen and our progesterone, you know, these sex hormones that really help us to feel vital and well and fertile and, creative, all these things that we really desire as women. However, really, these sex hormones are just the peak of the iceberg. They're the apex of that pyramid. And underneath of that, all of these other layers of hormone harmony need to be in place in order for our sex hormones to really thrive optimally. So kind of visualizing this pyramid structure, the base or the very bottom of this pyramid structure is our stress hormones, also known as our cortisol, our adrenaline, our epinephrine, norepinephrine, cortisol being like the most buzzword, right, of our stress hormones. Now, if our stress hormones are out of balance, there's no chance for our sex hormones at the top of the pyramid to be in balance. And the reason why is that our body is so intelligent, and our body knows that if we are in a high level of stress, meaning our cortisol or our stress hormones are flooding our body, it will actually shut down the production of our sex hormones. Because your body's intelligent and your body knows that if I'm in such a state of stress, I don't want to have a baby because it's not safe for me to be in this world, let alone, you know, the risk of bringing in a baby and needing to nurture and feed them. Our body thinks that when our cortisol is so high that we're in a war, we're in a famine, there's something wrong that is not conducive for the experience of bringing a child into this world. So it's actually a survival mechanism. And we can think of it just as this kind of scale. Stress hormones go up, sex hormones shut down, right? And the other way around, when we drive down that cortisol, those stress levels, our sex hormones naturally start to thrive. So that's the foundation of this pyramid is cortisol and stress hormones. We have to dial that in first. Now, once we get our stress hormones in check, the second tier, right, one kind of ladder step up this pyramid is our blood sugar. So our blood sugar, our insulin, how our body is metabolizing sugar. Now, another really common cause of sex hormone imbalances, again, whether someone's struggling with fertility or just irregular cycles or any diagnosed hormone imbalance like PCOS, endometriosis, et cetera, oftentimes there's a level of blood sugar dysregulation that's going on. So how her body's utilizing sugar. And what she might find, a woman with blood sugar dysregulation issues, is that she's kind of on this like energy and mood roller coaster, right? So throughout the day, she might have really high highs, the feeling really good, really energized, excited about life, passionate, creative, followed by a big dip, a feeling really low. And like an hour ago, I felt amazing, but now like what's going on? And this kind of roller coaster like that, her energy, her mood, all of that goes up and down. So without regulating that phase of our hormone, you know, pyramid, we can't really support our sex hormones because again, those fluctuations in our blood sugar keeps us in a survival state, right? It's keeping us in fight or flight. And again, the fluctuation of our stress hormones caused by dysregulated blood sugar will again shut those sex hormones down, causing the hormone imbalance. The third step on this pyramid is our thyroid hormones. So thyroid hormones is so essential for optimal sex hormones, for our energy, for our mood, for our focus, for a healthy metabolism, for a healthy weight. All of this matters. And so if our thyroid hormones are not in balance, and that this is, again, whether we have a formal diagnosis of hypothyroidism or hyperthyroidism, Graves' disease, Hashimoto's, whether we have a family history of it or not, if we have a level of just, it's not optimal, right? Right? Maybe we don't have a diagnosable disease, but our TSH levels, our free T3, free T4 hormone, thyroid hormone levels are trending out of balance, then it's not in an optimal situation. And that will, of course, again, steal the raw materials needed for our sex hormones to keep our thyroid active. So all of these levels beneath the sex hormones, right? The cortisol, the stress hormones, the blood sugar, and how that relates to our hormones, our thyroid hormones, these are all survival hormones. But our procreation hormones, the apex of the pyramid, our sex hormones, this is optional, right? This is only for procreation. Now, of course, you and I know that we need our sex hormones in balance for optimal health, for vitality, for well-being as a woman, whether we become a mother, whether we don't, whatever stage of motherhood we're in. But having all of these more survival-based hormones underneath the sex hormones in balance is really what optimizes our sex hormones.
That is so interesting. And you described that really beautifully in a way that like I could envision it so well. I will also put this image underneath. So for anyone who's watching the video, if you go underneath this, you'll be able to see a link. I'll find that your post and I'll put that under there because I think for a visual, it's just super, well, for me anyway, I love seeing visuals. And really, as you were saying all of this, my next question is like, wow, I can already feel that there is never going to be a definite answer because there's so many layers involved in this journey. Because my question is, how can we notice these imbalances? How can they manifest? So maybe the question is like, what are things that, what are the first signs of imbalances that women will notice?
Yeah, I love this. So it feels kind of like a two-part thing. Maybe we start with what shows or how the disease kind of manifests or the imbalances manifest, and then in what to do with it. So how do we know if we have a hormone imbalance? One is, I so trust the feminine intuition, right? And I trust women to know their body. I trust mamas to know their body. There's so much intuition and wisdom. And so, of course, we know if there's a level of imbalance. Something feels off. Something feels less than optimal, whether that's with our energy levels, our mood, our cognition. We have brain fog. We feel less focused, less drive, you know, as well as physical symptoms. Like if, you know, a week before your period, you're just like down for the count and you've got cramping or breast tenderness or skin breakouts, all of those are classic signs that there's trending a hormone imbalance. But my favorite way to interpret not just whether you have an imbalance or not, but to know what your imbalance is, of course, like as an integrative health practitioner, I lab test, right? We work with science and we work with all these amazing lab tests to check. However, as women, we are so fortunate that every single month we actually have a free monthly blood test, and that is called your period blood. So if you are a woman of reproductive age and you're menstruating, then of course we can actually look at our blood and assess quite clearly and quite accurately what is happening on a hormonal level for us. So should we get into, Danielle? Do you want to go into kind of just some quick examples of how to assess period blood?
That would be great. Yeah, that would be awesome.
Okay, let's do it. So a few different scenarios. So if when you have your period, you look at your blood and you notice that it is a darker red color. It's dark red, almost purpley, or it could even have a slight blue tinge to it. It might have a lot of blood clots in it, and it might be a little bit thicker, right? It's more thick, a little bit more coagulated. You get like strings of blood or more clots. This kind of picture of blood is pointing towards estrogen dominance. Now, estrogen dominance can either be too much estrogen, or it can simply be too much estrogen in relationship to your progesterone, right? So for example, my case, when I lab tested, it made sense that I had all the symptoms of estrogen dominance, breast tenderness, a lot of cramping, I would feel puffier or more weight gain before my period, classic signs of estrogen dominance. However, when I lab tested, I have normal estrogen, but I had really low progesterone. So it was still showing the signs of high estrogen, even though it was normal estrogen, because of the ratio between estrogen and progesterone, our two main sex hormones, matters. So that's one possibility. The darker blood, the heavier cycles, you know, that is pointing to estrogen dominance for us to take care of. Another possibility is low progesterone. So I had both, right? I had that period blood, but I also had these classic signs. So how do we know if we have low progesterone? This is shorter cycles, right? So the average day, average amount of days for our menstrual cycle, not just our bleeding days, but our whole hormonal cycle from day one of our period to the next day one of our next period, is, you know, the average length of a cycle. If we're getting periods 24 days, 23 days, 22, 21, less than that, really irregular periods are kind of all over the place, this can be pointing to progesterone deficiency. There's not enough progesterone. And progesterone is our pregnancy hormone. It makes us feel sexy. It makes us feel juicy. It makes us feel nourished. It nourishes and tonifies the womb. It makes us, you know, when we have enough progesterone, we feel like this wise woman before our period. We're tapped into our intuition. We're connected to our female sex hormone of progesterone. When we're deficient, we feel like this old, just like haggled woman. You know, we're not the wise woman. We're kind of just like the old hag, you know, just as grumpy and mean and nothing is right in the world and complaining and critical. So progesterone is really what bridges the gap between, you know, us feeling quote unquote, you know, biatchy, to feeling like our wise, you know, whole embodied feminine self. So low progesterone is shorter cycles. The other classic sign of low progesterone is that in the start of our period and the end of our period, there's a brown color. So if you're noticing more of a brownish color, like a prune juice color when you start your bleed or you finish your bleed, this is a classic sign of low progesterone. And this people say, oh, it's just oxidized blood. Yes, it's true. But what that means is that it's actually blood from your previous menstrual cycle that wasn't released. So it's actually blood from your previous period that wasn't released, and that is a sign of low progesterone. Your endometrium isn't fully shedding. There wasn't enough progesterone to fully release it. So that's the second scenario. We had high estrogen, we had low progesterone, now we have low estrogen. This is the third one I'll share. So this one is you might have a really light pink color blood. So if it's really light cycles, you maybe bleed 1 or 2 days. You might notice some of the similar symptoms to progesterone deficiency. There might be breast tenderness, there might be moodiness before your period. There might be signs of like hot flashes. So the days leading up before your period, you just feel like you're on fire, you're really hot. You feel dry, you know, when you make love, there's not enough lubrication. It feels tender, it feels sensitive. And this more like light pink color of blood, or it might feel really thin and almost like mixed with mucus or cervical mucus. That would be the signs of low estrogen. And then, of course, a classic healthy hormones are balanced is a bright cranberry red, no major clots, a balanced flow, not too heavy, not too long. Around a 28-ish day, give or take a few days, and we get our cycle very regularly, like on the same day, you know, every single month.
Wow, thank you for sharing that. And this is a point of being with our blood as well, because as for many women, it's also coming over this hurdle of actually having a relationship with our blood because of how maybe we've been brought up to believe what it means to have a period and the taboo around it. And even when, for myself, when I was, you know, awakening to being in relationship with my body and understanding her language, I remember my blood being kind of like a block for me because I didn't want to look at my blood. So actually that relationship of starting to look at your blood, see its texture, maybe feel it and smell it is a really beautiful way for deepening the connection with our body and seeing what comes up with that as well. Because I think it's another thing as you're sharing these arisings coming from hormonal imbalance also gives almost this like allowance to be with the blood. Like there's a reason for doing it. There's a reason because you get to get this feedback to see what's happening inside of your body. And just, wow, how incredible is it that it gives us this monthly feedback? Like, wow, every time it blows my mind. So how can we, you're about to go into part two with this and I'm really curious for where you're going to get to with it because I'm sure people listening will be like, so like, what do we do if we're noticing this? How do we support the balance of our sexual hormones?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, love this. So absolutely. The good news is that there's so much that we can do. And once we have the awareness of what that hormone balance is, there's two pathways. One is focusing on the basics, the foundations, and that's kind of what we'll focus on in this moment is exactly like the universal principles of hormone balance. And then the other pathway is once you know what your unique hormonal imbalance is, there is specific things that you can do to rebalance that unique imbalance. So generally speaking, kind of coming back to that hormone pyramid, is really number one, focus on stress. So stress reduction is so essential. And stress can be emotional stress, mental stress. I mean, there's no deficiency of stress exposure in the world that we live in. And even if we might not feel stressed up in our minds, right? There could also be physical stressors, right? Especially, you know, I know there's a lot of moms listening here and they love their life, they love their kids, they love their families. And it's a lot. It's physically a lot, especially, you know, breastfeeding and all of these different just aspects of the journey of motherhood and into motherhood. There's a lot involved in it. So stress is number one. My number one thing is like every woman can take 15 minutes a day to drop into that juicy parasympathetic state. So when we get into that parasympathetic nervous system state, it turns that cortisol response down. So what is that parasympathetic state? You know, at the end of a yoga class, I'm sure every person listening to this, you know, they've done a yoga class at one point or another. They're into spirituality and, you know, wellness, all these things. And, you know, just that like in between state of like being awake and being asleep, just like you feel so soothed in your body's so just dropped into deep relaxation. That's the parasympathetic state. So the goal is every day, 15 minutes in that state is going to be enough to really replenish and rebalance those cortisol levels at the deepest way. That's number one, is we want to optimize, of course, our stress hormones. Everyone knows their own personal tips. You can meditate, you can do breath work, do yoga, you know, work with a practitioner, sound healing, whatever gets you out of the stress response. Then let's go up a tier. Let's get into blood sugar. So blood sugar is, of course, what we eat, but also how we eat. So, of course, making sure that our plate is a nice balance of all of our macros. So protein, fat, fiber, carbohydrates and starches, spices, antioxidants, herbs, those types of things. So a big cause of the blood sugar imbalances is that we're eating too many carbs in relationship to the protein, fat, fiber. So I'm not an advocate of low carb, especially in hormonal balance and women's health by any means. I'm not into the keto, the paleo. We need carbohydrates. But the truth is that if we're having naked carbs, as I call it, we're having just a plate of pasta with no protein, with no fat, with no fiber, we will get that spike in our blood sugar and then that crash in our blood sugar shortly after. And our energy and our mood and our cognition will be on that roller coaster up and down with us. So little hot tip there is just make sure that with every meal, you're combining your healthy starch in the form of sweet potatoes and ancient grains and carrots and beets and squash and pumpkin, all those things, that you're combining that with adequate protein, fat, and fiber.
Big shout out to our sponsor, Evolving Humans, who are the pioneers for energy healing. This practice that I was taught 4 years ago has been studied by researchers all around the world to provide evidence of the physiological effects of energy healing. And I'm not just saying this because it's a promotion, but I have used this practice every single day for 4 years. And personally, I've noticed the most impact in my emotional state. This energy practice taught me how to feel energy in my body and observe the sensations. The technique involves you using your hand and connecting to the energy field within your body. And with this gentle, loving awareness that you bring to the table, everything is seen and lived. The whole being comes into alignment. During the birth of my daughter, I tore, and the discomfort that I was experiencing with this tear started to ease up dramatically when I would use this technique. In the show notes, you'll find the link to Evolving Humans so that you can explore this healing technique, which is available through a course that you can join today.
And fiber. And if we look at a plate, let's say we'd want half of our plate of vegetables that are like light and green and colorful. So bell peppers and broccoli and cauliflower and asparagus and salad, cucumbers, those types of things. We'd want a quarter of our plate to be protein. So that can be animal-based protein of any sort. It can also be plant-based protein of lentils, dal, beans, seeds, etc. And then the last quarter of our plate, we want to be our healthy starch. So that's our sweet potato, our pumpkin, our squash, those types of things. And then we season with fat. So whether that's some avocado or some other things. So that would be our thyroid hormones, our blood sugar. The next is our actual thyroid hormones. So how do we balance our thyroid? There's physical factors, there's emotional factors. And this is a big one, I think, especially for women. So our thyroid is a physical gland that lives in our throat region. And there's certain nutrients that it needs to really rebalance itself. So we need selenium, we need minerals, we need iron, we need zinc, we need magnesium, all of these really important nutrients for our thyroid to function optimally. However, there's also an energetic component to this. So when we think of our energy body, right? We have our physical body, we have our mental, emotional body, we have our energy body, which is this accumulation of our life force energy, our vital energy. And the throat area is the center of our throat chakra, our Vishuddhi chakra in Sanskrit. And this energy center is responsible for our self-expression, right? How we communicate, how we express ourselves, we express our needs, our desires, our creativity, right? And I will say that there has not been a single thyroid hormone imbalance case that I've worked with that has not been associated with some level of self-suppression, of not speaking up, right? When they, you know, saying yes when they meant no. All of these different factors, not having good boundaries, suppressing their creative desires, expressing, you know, their truth, right? Their authentic, honest truth. And so that's an energetic factor here as well of like, how can we really open up our voice? How can we express ourselves more clearly, more authentically, more honestly? And that actually really helps to free up the region of the throat You know, like when there's a very tangible and kind of bridge between the energy body and the physical thyroid in this. And you know, when you're like about to cry, you know, the sensation of like that welling, that lump in your throat, feeling choked up, we call it. We call it choked up for a reason, because that energy body is just like clenching, right? We're closing down that energy center and our physical body responds as this contraction. Now, what does that do? Restrict blood flow to our thyroid. So of course, you know, this constant like shoving down of our emotions, shoving down of our truth, what we want to say, will have an impact on our physical thyroid. And then finally, we get into the sex hormones, right? Which is so many things foundational. It is our nutrition, eating clean organic foods, a lot of vegetables, all these good things. It's exercising, it's stress reduction, it's toxin removal, right? A lot of the plastics that we're exposed to and BPAs, all of these chemicals, endocrine disrupting chemicals that we're exposed to on a daily basis. We do need support in detoxifying that and kind of emptying our rain barrel of those toxins that can lead to those sex hormone imbalances in the first place.
Wow, you really nailed that one. And I feel like because we're in preconception conversation right now, all of these things, it can be sound quite overwhelming. This is the time to be exploring this. I mean, for some mothers listening, maybe they already have another child. Maybe they don't, and this is their first, but I feel like this is the time to actually be considering, what are we eating? What are we, how are we moving our body? How are we resting? Do we know how to rest? Do we know how to switch off our mind and have our body actually be in a state of rest instead of just laying there and thinking like a fake state of rest almost? And also how to communicate. I'm really glad you brought this in, because I feel like this time before conception, being able to communicate our own needs and also being able to know what we need primarily is like, what do we actually need? Because I think for many women, I hold women's circles online, and one of the things that I've noticed is I don't know what I need. I just know I feel out of sync. So it's like getting to the point of stillness to be able to listen to our body, to find out what it is, because what we think it might be might actually just be, I need more sleep or something like that. Or I'm walking down streets that are full of pollution and my body's going into stress response. You know, like, it's things that we can't think about. We have to come into stillness so that they start to separate and we see actually what is the foundation of it. And I love the pyramid image, because it allows this separation to kind of look into different areas of our life. And even though they all influence each other, it gives us just this space to be able to check in with what we're doing in our life. What is our routine and where can we make changes and adaptions? And I think this is one of the biggest things I notice. So now I'm over the bridge in motherhood. This is my first child. Sleep deprivation is a massive deal. So, and this isn't just for mothers. This is for humanity. I think we're in this, we're pushed onto this treadmill that is always like yang focused, like always on the go, always creating, always giving something. And nothing is the celebration of slowing down. Well, I don't really see it anywhere. It's not really celebrated. And I try and I encourage in our smaller groups, it's like celebrating the moments when someone says, I'm not going to come to this event today, or I'm going to skip out on this because I need to rest my body. And I'm like, yes, like celebrate you for doing that instead of feeling bad for like thinking that you're letting someone down. And I think that's another step of how do we connect to the people around us? How do we encourage them to nourish their body? And I think using the word nourishment is just a massive leap as well, because it's the question, does this nourish me? Does this serve me? Because when we see, once we're nourished, this ripples out to the rest of our life and puts us in this vibrant way of living, which is what we're all moving to. So even if a woman is not looking to conceive, this information is like vital to for all humans to know. And it's I'm still blown away with how little they share in the school system as well. You know, let's hold the conversation. But anyway, back to like this rest and this sleep deprivation, Because it is shown, like research shows that when you go over into, when you have the baby in your arms, you are going to be depleted of sleep. Like it happens because maybe you've got baby in bed or you're breastfeeding and you're constantly on. And this is, let's say it's normal to motherhood. But there are ways, right, to be able to nourish ourselves, like through the things that you mentioned in the beginning. You mentioned that state when you're in like Shavasana when you finish your yoga. It's like be doing yoga nidra or something like that. Like I always promote yoga nidra. I'm like, you can do 50 minutes of yoga nidra. Just lay down, put the earplugs in, get this rest. And it really does make a difference. Like we can see that through the people that are in our space, in our circles. Like it makes a massive difference. So would you be able to just like go into how sleep really affects us when we start to get depleted? How can that affect us on all these levels of our being?
Absolutely. So sleep is so, so important in every stage of our life. And I'd say it's even more important in the journey of motherhood. That's in preconception to build up our sleep stores, to build up that muscle of rest before we fall pregnant, before, you know, that postpartum period where we're with our new baby. So without a doubt, this is crucial. So let's break it down into two areas. One is sleep optimization and how to optimize sleep. And then the other side of it is how to build more rest outside of sleep, because we don't always have the luxury of sleep in that stage. So a big kind of hormonal connection here is, you know how we talked about cortisol, this primary stress hormone. Now, stress hormone works in opposition with our sex hormones, but it also works in opposition with our sleep hormone, right? Melatonin. So when we have, again, those higher levels of cortisol, it shuts down our production of melatonin. However, it's a two-way street. We can also increase our melatonin levels and it will actually bring down our cortisol. So that means that one of the best ways to reduce our stress hormones is to sleep and have epic, amazing quality sleep. So how do we get that? A few hacks for, let's kind of go through different scenarios for preconception. Is little things like building a sleep schedule. So having an evening routine, you know, having just like a little ritual that helps us turn our brain off. I like to work with the 3-2-1 method, which is stop eating 3 hours before bed. So 3 hours before bed, we're not eating anything, giving our gut and our digestive system a break so that our sleep chemicals and our digestive chemicals are not in competition with another. 2 hours before bed, we're going to stop drinking anything. So we're not waking up in the night to have to go pee. And then 1 hour before bed is we turn off all technology. So we're off our phone, we're off, you know, blue light, we're off TV, we're off Netflix, we're off all of those things that, of course, naturally our cell phones emit blue light. And blue light stimulates serotonin and cortisol, our daytime wakefulness chemicals, and actually suppress our production of melatonin, our key sleep hormone. So let's say for a woman that does have a baby, right? And she is struggling with sleep of all kinds. One of the best things that we can do is, again, you know, bring down that blue light. So let's say baby wakes up in the middle of the night for a feeding or you've got to get up for something, right? Is don't turn on the blue fluorescent lights, right? Is having, like, I've got right behind me here, this is my red light. And a red light actually will allow that melatonin to stay active. As soon as we turn blue light on, it's going to just drop our melatonin and it's going to kick on our cortisol, our stress hormones. So that's a great thing, is just like at night or, you know, on your bedside table, just change your light bulb from the blue light or the warm. I'm sure nobody has a fluorescent light bulb right beside their bed. That would just be crazy. But, you know, even those yellow warm lights, just change it for red. That's a great hack. Or I've got like my salt lamp right beside me here. That's another great way where it's emitting those really warm hues and that can be really supportive for sleep. Now, the other side of it is not just sleep, because, you know, I think people generally know how to optimize their sleep. Don't eat right before bed, have an evening routine, wind down in the evening, create an optimal sleep environment, you know, lavender spray, do some legs up the wall yoga pose. Like a lot of these tips are really just like on Instagram and on Google, and they're easy. However, what do we do when we're doing everything right? We're trying our best to get optimal sleep, but we've got a baby keeping us up all night, or, you know, there's things getting in the way of optimal sleep. Then we have to focus on what we call NSDRs, non-sleep deep rest practices. So as you mentioned, Danielle, you love your yoga nidra. I'm such a big fan too. So yoga nidra, things that are non-sleep, but we're getting into that deep rest state, because that will also recover our nervous system. a sleep-deprived nervous system is primed for anxiety, depletion, feeling out of our minds, for hormone imbalances, all those things. So we can actually recover our nervous system, which primarily happens at night when we sleep. We can do that through these other non-sleep deep rest protocols. So let's maybe name more of a few. Yoga Nidra is absolutely one of my favorites. 1 hour of Yoga Nidra equals 4 hours of deep sleep. They've like mapped this out scientifically. It's so much fun. 1 hour of deep meditation is worth 8 hours of sleep, of deep sleep. So this I can actually affirm to be true. I used to live my previous life, like not past life, but just before this chapter of life, I actually lived as a part-time monk and I lived in India for many years and went through this chapter for over 5 years. I meditated for 12 hours a day for certain months of the year and spent a lot of time in silence and in just deep spiritual practice. I did not need sleep. My body was so rested all of the time that just that much meditation, I could easily go lay down in my bed for a few hours at night and be totally rested. So what's some other, let's say like yoga, that Shavasana, just like a little cat nap. One of my favorites is Epsom salt baths, and it's a two-way street. So one is just, it's restful, it's warm, it's cozy, jump in there for 20 minutes. But when you add Epsom salts, you're actually hacking or harmonizing your nervous system, because that magnesium sulfate in Epsom salts is like a tranquilizer for your nervous system. We actually need a lot of Epsom salts in there, like for sitz baths postpartum, for sleep optimization, Epsom salt baths. We really need like a kilo of Epsom salts. So like a few teaspoons or like a cup isn't going to cut it for a therapeutic effect. Still relaxing, still going to get some benefits. But we really need like a kilo of Epsom salts for it to be really therapeutic, for that magnesium to penetrate the nervous system and physically drop you into that parasympathetic state. What else would you add, Danielle?
Oh, these are such good ones. And I feel like even just talking about it, I can feel my body unraveling and just being so relaxed just thinking about that bath. Oh my gosh. So what I wanted to add to this, because I feel like it's such a needed conversation and it sounds so simple, like, oh, just get rest. But there is that part of our mind that can play up. So I feel like having this exploration in the preconception phase is so important, because being able to truly allow ourselves to fully be in their moments is a practice. Like if you're someone that is constantly in their mind, creating things, planning things, like everything's so scheduled, there's always something to create. When you like go and sit down or get in your bath, you might be in that bath, but you might be actually thinking like, what you're going to cook for dinner, or what's like the next podcast, or is that just me? So like, I know it is a practice, because I have been raised to be in my mind, and I took a journey similar to yours, like through meditation. And when I sat in meditation, I was like, whoa, what is going on up there? Like, who is in that brain? So, and I know this is like very much in the, on social media, it's very much there in awareness of this mindfulness way of existing, but it is the practice. And I think through living with small rituals, like you've given some amazing ideas there of just like being in ritual throughout the day. So waking up, making a cup of tea, smelling it, feeling the warmth, going through the senses. That's like my very simple way of remembering, because sometimes I can get stuck into what practices do I need to do? Like, how do I do this? And it can activate my mind, instead of now, because I've had to do this in quick time after giving birth and like being able to calm my nervous system. I just take each moment to be like, am I fully present with all my senses? And when I say, no, I'm not, because I'm thinking about what I'm doing tomorrow, I just say, let's just take 5 minutes, whether I'm outside listening to the birds, like feeling my feet on the earth, and also not having an expectation that I'm going to feel calm in the next moment, like, because I might be completely depleted and it might be me just like filling up these empty spaces that have been used up. So just like filling it with these moments, but a trust that in like maybe by the evening or maybe tomorrow, I'll be feeling more aligned and more in balance. Because I used to have the expectation that, well, I've just done this nidra, or I've just like had a bath and I'm still pissed. Like I'm still like feeling completely shattered and I don't want to be touched. I don't actually want to like exist right now and do anything. So when I got it into my head, well, I'm probably just depleted from years of pushing myself and like actually lack of sleep, because I joined the military at 16 years old. Like my whole life was filled up with doing stuff and performing and pushing my body and being on contraceptive pill, you know, hormonal contraceptive pill. So I now see, I've changed my view on things to that I am just rebuilding my stores and I'm nourishing myself. So if I get out of sync and I feel out of balance, it's okay. I don't need to know the reason, because I could probably plant it on my partner. I could be like, probably the relationship I'm in, like I should leave, you know, that's my go-to. Like I should just leave. Like now I can't because I have a baby. But usually it's never to do with him. It's to do with, I need to take that nap with my daughter in the afternoon, or I need to remember to have my tea in the morning as soon as I wake up, instead of like first making pancakes for everyone. Like I need to nourish myself first. And this all in preconception is just a great practice to get into, of nourishing yourself and letting that ripple out to your family and your friends and whoever's around you, and encouraging that in them as well. So I'm really glad like we got into this part of the conversation, because it is just like, it's a massive part, I think.
Oh, absolutely. As you're sharing that, I'm so reminded that so much of our capacity to rest as women is like, yeah, sure, one, not knowing how to, and like, what are the things that are restful? Because we didn't learn that. But second is just like permission, you know, like we do like different chapters of life. Like we're so forced by society into busyness, into intensity, into go, 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 into achieve, into become, just into this really masculine way of living, that like how it's not fair for us to think that this is a skill that should just be innate, you know, when we've lived so unnaturally for so long. You know, I'd say at the deepest level, this is the most natural state of being, is your rested, embodied, receiving feminine state. But we haven't practiced that part of us. And so I think that so much of it is permission to rest and not seeing, you know, I'm sure you coming from like military background, you know, there's a big part of me as well that's like, rest is selfish. It's like self-indulgent. It's, you know, lazy. It's just not nice. It's greedy. There's a level of like greed with rest. And there's so much just unraveling of those thoughts and really rewiring it to this way that's like, my rest is so productive, you know, especially in that premenstrual phase, or, you know, in phases where we are in a deeper level of depletion, right after you had a baby, postpartum, in that premenstrual phase, is like the most productive thing that I can do right now is to lay in bed and do a yoga nidra, right? Versus this push, this hustle, because it really does make a difference.
Yeah, 100%. And our like world is not promoting that. And when you mentioned about the lighting, this is a big one for our family. Like we'll come to a new house because we move like homes all the time as we're traveling. And we always change the lights. Like it's a massive one for us. And like as it becomes darker, we start to put the candles on, and we know the importance of it, of being in tune with the natural light, not just because we've read it, but we feel it in ourselves. And if we've been on our computers too much without the, I mean, we have a great, I don't know if you have this on yours. It's called, what's the one that I have? It's called Flux, F.L-U-X. And we have that on our computer. So now it's just like really dim lighting on the screen. But if we don't have that, we both notice like the headaches, the like short tempers, the just the change in the way we show up. So it's catching all these little things. And even though they're like normal by societal standards, they're so not normal. Like they're so not normal. And then that ties into everything that you shared about, you know, like the food, the nutrition, like how are we nourishing ourselves? Or is it fast food and processed foods? And it's all like quick, get it out of the way, like get the food done, like everything's quick, 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 onto the next thing. And I really, as you were talking then about the things that come up from slowing down, one of the main things for me is like worth. If I'm not doing something, if I'm not creating, then I'm not worthy. And like that is such a deeply like conditioned thing inside of me. And I'm working on it all the time, because I am naturally super curious. And I am really inspired to change like the path of my immediate ancestors, you know, like to remember and to re-educate myself. So I'm always in this balance of like not taking on too much education, and integrating what I'm learning and also giving myself time to rest. And I feel like, so I have my circles is filled with a lot of mothers actually. And it is like this feeling of the need to like take in this information, but then we need to have the moments to like integrate it. That's so important because there can be this feeling at the end, like, well, we're doing all this work. Like, who is holding the mothers, you know, like who is holding the mothers? And I'm always super inspired to see maidens and women without children supporting families, because this is what we have to call back. The mothers can't just take this all on. And then this ripples then into how are we supporting the elders in our community. And it's this whole cycle. It's this continuum. It doesn't just end with us. We're literally changing the course of like humanity right now. It sounds massive, but it's so true. By resting, we're literally reclaiming so, so, so much. Like, wow. And it's just, it sounds so simple, doesn't it? Don't do, but that's it. Like, whoop.
Oh, you're so right. I love that you mentioned just like these pillars of support around a mother and how important that is. My best friend just had a baby here literally 5 days ago, and it's been so fun the leading up to the birth and this postpartum. And I'm not sure if it's the same in Costa Rica, but here in Bali, there is zero expectation that motherhood is a singular role. There's such an understanding, and that's both with the local people, the expats here, that it's such a communal, it takes a village, right, to raise a child. And it's been so amazing, you know, like our girlfriends here, up until her birth, we would go over, you know, a few times and cook, you know, so she has these 40 days of postpartum meals in her freezer, home cooked with love. And, you know, she's just so surrounded by support, you know, by her friends and family that are really just supporting her in this postpartum. So, yeah, I just, you know, rest is a self-responsibility. It's also a community responsibility.
Ooh, that's a good one. That's going to be like the cutout from this and the Instagram post. No, that's so true. And sending love as well to your friend in this postpartum stage. And it's amazing that she has you and the rest of her community around her. And this is exactly why, you know, I got into this, is because I saw which was in my mind a lack. To change the tune of the complaints, I had to make it a dream, you know, to call it into like, how do I treat myself? Because if I treat myself a certain way, because I know that I'm worthy of it, then it starts to come in through like the outside, it comes in. So what a beautiful place to finish up this conversation. And I could talk to you forever, like I know it. But before we go, I would love for you to share where the listeners can find you and what you're offering.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for that, Danielle. Yeah. So I'm on Instagram. My handle is Bindi Stables, B-I-N-D-I, Stables with a B. Love to connect with women on there. I'm always sharing content and ideas and inspiration for optimal women's health, as well as my podcast is such a labor of love. And there's all kinds of episodes on there on hormone balancing and like menstrual cycle syncing, preconception, all of these things. So yeah, I'll maybe share a few like key episodes with you for the show notes, but anyone can just go find Vibrant You on any podcast app. And just a wealth of information and insights there.
Amazing. Thank you so much for sitting with me. I really appreciate this.
It's been such a pleasure, Danielle. Thank you so much. And for all the work that you do in the world, it's such a pillar of just support for women. And yeah, I'm so grateful to have connected with you today.